This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark, brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can read his articles at examiner.com.
Everyone, I'm joined here with Winston Wu. Winston, it's nice having you on the show. So what we're going to be focusing on most of the show is on American culture and how it kind of comparing American culture to other cultures throughout the world and a lot of the problems in American culture. I guess you can start off by telling us about yourself. Your parents were immigrants from Taiwan, and you grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. Could you please tell us about your story growing up and about your, kind of a brief biography?
Okay, yeah. Well, I was born in Taiwan, and then I came to the States when I was three, and I mostly grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. But I'd say it's ever since I was in elementary school, I mean, I've never had a very, very authentic life. I mean, I was bullied and teased, and I thought the world was an evil place, and I didn't know how to make sense out of that. So you know, then I turned to religion and stuff, and later, I mean, eventually, I realized that you know, we have a very inauthentic culture and a high rate of mental illness, and there's just so much social dysfunction, you know, with the high divorce rate, with the breakdown of family values, and so I've discovered, you know, that it's mostly the culture that's the problem, not the people that are suffering. I mean, there's a lot of factors, but the society is just dysfunctional. I mean, we have the highest mental illness rate in the world, and that really speaks volumes. And if you go to other countries or if you travel a lot, you find out that people don't have to see a therapist or a psychologist when they have problems. They have people to talk to, and basically the key thing in America is you aren't really. I mean, you feel insecure by default, and you aren't really allowed to be yourself. So you're constantly running on this treadmill of trying to keep up this pseudo confidence, this bravado, which isn't even authentic. And so I mean, no one really feels accepted for who they are. That's why people wear such a fake mask and they act very superficial. Everyone, even good looking people, are insecure deep down inside. And there's also a narcissism epidemic where everyone, you know, I mean, a high percentage of people are narcissistic and they think they deserve the best and they take every little insult. I mean, not insult, but they take every little thing personally. And they can twist a compliment into an insult. So people have very fragile, insecure egos, and you just don't find this in a lot of the rest of the world. You know, where things are. I mean, every country has problems and corruption and good and bad things, but they have the same problems that people have had for thousands of years. Whereas in America, the social dysfunction and the breakdown of family values and the inauthentic lifestyle is a fairly recent phenomenon. It's not natural at all. There's just something inauthentic. And also, a very key telling thing is that if you're a very down-to-earth and sincere person in America, I mean, you actually don't fit in with a lot of cliques and groups, and you're kind of the more authentic and down to earth you are, the more of a misfit you are, and I think that speaks volumes about the inauthentic nature of the culture and society that it's become.
Yeah, that's the thing about American culture. I mean, you wrote an extensive article about your experience in high school. I think a lot of people have really miserable experiences in high school. But in high school, you see the most extreme of that culture where everyone, it's very cliquish. And if you don't fit into one of those cliques, you're kind of on your own. But I think that's true of American culture. I think it's worse in places like California and New York. Maybe better. I don't know if there's a difference in places like the Midwest, but it's definitely worse. I think it's worse in places like California and New York, but it's something that's it's the culture of this whole country. I've spent several months in England, and even there, I think people were more open. A good example is I noticed there were a lot of instances where I was maybe like 16 when I was there with my family. But you would just start up a conversation with a stranger if you went, let's say, went on a hike or went to a restaurant. And I live in L.A. That's very rare in L.A. where you would have a conversation with a stranger. And people are very – I mean, I think places like L.A. are the worst. But I think this is something that part of American culture as a whole.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it is the worst on the West Coast and also in New York. But I think, I mean, from what a lot of people say, it's actually the worst on the West Coast, USA. Because if you go inland, even if you just go to Nevada, you start to notice that people are more down to earth. And you know, and the more inland you go, the more people are more down to earth. I mean, that comparatively speaking, you know, to the West Coast, of course. I mean, plus people who live in a rural nature environment are going to be more down to earth anyways, you know, but a lot of the attention in Western culture comes from California and New York. So the rest of the world sees us, you know, sees the U.S. as being California, you know, because, you know, the Hollywood and the media culture comes from there.
So much of it is about just people. A lot of people end up being miserable. They devote so much of their lives to trying to see who is a better car. And a lot of the times, these people end up being miserable. They don't really enjoy life. Everything's about status and showing off materialism.
Yeah, and I read an article recently that someone sent. That said, that I mean, America is. I mean, people are, you know, still have basic morals and a conscience, but they're kind of soulless in that, you know, they've been completely enslaved to their work and their job, and there's just not a lot of meaningful interaction between people, and people don't even know their neighbors. I mean, they just smile politely to get along, but there's a huge lack of human connection, and the thing is, you're not allowed to talk about this, because if you go out and talk about it, you know, out in public in America or you know, whether it's at a party or a work environment, I mean, people think you're a freak, you know, or a loser to talk about this, because people always keep this facade and bravado and mask that everything is going great and everything is wonderful and every day is a great day and that they're always happy even when they're not. There's this pressure to constantly maintain this illusion that everything is great even when it's not. So it's a very inauthentic culture in a lot of ways, and I think that leads to a psychosis where people have a split from reality and themselves, and I think subconsciously everyone knows this deep down, you know, but some people just don't realize it, and some people can't put it into words. And I get a lot of fan letters, you know, from people that visit my website, happierabroad.com. Fan letters that say, you know, I didn't know anyone else thought this way. I thought it was just me, and I thought, you know, I was the problem. Because our culture tells you to blame yourself and not the culture, and you know, but people that are more aware and realize, you know, things like I would encourage people to Google these names, like Eric Fromm, for example, a Swiss psychologist. He actually said that most people are insane, and insane people get along with other insane people, whereas the authentic person usually becomes a misfit. So that's Eric Fromm said that, and also a few hundred years ago, there was a great German philosopher named Arthur Schopenhauer, who was also very insightful and said a lot of true things. I mean, even though he was a pessimist, you know, I mean, most of what he said was very true, you know, that society tends to be inauthentic in that, you know, the when you're trying to appeal to a large group of people, you kind of have to say what they want to hear and to be inauthentic, and that problem has reached, you know, the height. It's you know, an all-time high in America. So it's definitely the society and the culture, not the individual. And authentic people tend to have a hard time fitting in.
Yeah, and everything's kind of becoming kind of fake about our society. I mean, if you look at the food is all artificial. And if you go into a lot of the newer cities or suburbs, everything is really kind of fake and ugly. And there's just a lot of so many different aspects of our society. I mean, from the way people interact with each other to the aesthetics to the food that we're eating.
Yeah, for some reason, I don't know what they put in the food, we all know there's this obesity problem in America. And I don't think it's just, you know, a lack of exercise. There's got to be something in the food. I don't know what, but some, you know, there's some kind of chemical because a lot of people notice that, you know, like a lot of immigrants notice that when they come to America, for some reason, the food makes you fat or throws your body out of proportion. And it also makes you more angry. It flares your temper for some reason. I don't know why, I mean, we don't know a lot of things that go on, like at the higher levels of government and the higher corporations and what the elite do. I mean, it could be a conspiracy. It's you know, to in our food, you know, or a Monsanto or whatever. I mean, there could be a conspiracy. I mean, we just don't know because the American public is not told a lot of things that goes on. And when you're not told,
Organic food should be accessible to everyone, but it's considered like a luxury item, like that. Like rich people who go to Whole Foods can get organic food, but it's not really accessible to your average person. I mean, a lot of working class people eat it at like McDonald's, for instance, because that's all they can afford. Good quality food is like almost like a luxury item.
Yeah, and it's expensive. I mean, you have to be well off to be eating organic food from health stores every day. But that's one of the things. When I was in Europe, I was told that, you know, most of the food there is natural and organic. There's no need for an organic health food store in Europe because they don't put the kind of chemicals that they do in America. And so if you go to Europe, for instance, you'll see that most people, you know, they don't have that obesity problem there. Most people are really thin, you know, and height, weight proportionate. And, it's only when America exports McDonald's and fast food over there that people start becoming more and more overweight. But overall, I mean, they're a lot more thin and normal. And it's got to be something in the food. You know, as they say, you are what you eat. So,
but with the globalization, that's all spreading to the rest of the world.
Yeah, I mean, the Western culture, you know, exports, you know, its culture to the rest of the world, you know, and you know, like McDonald's and the culture, and so I mean some countries are becoming a little more like that, you know, but it's if you travel or internationally, you'll see that most countries are still not like that. I mean, even in Europe, I mean you can have some good things in Western culture without, you know, the bad things. And like you said, people in England, you know, seem more open and down to earth. And you'll notice that in you know, pretty much all of Europe, that people just have this are just more authentic. You know, they don't give this fake smile. If you see someone smile at you, you know, it's usually a real smile. I mean, it's usually an authentic smile, not a fake one.
You also talk about European culture and Asian culture. I guess we can start talking about Asian culture. You talk about their positive and negative characteristics, but I know some people have said that when you were growing up, you did feel a little bit out of place with Asian American culture. You talked about how it's kind of has a strong emphasis on conformity. And you talked about like you talked about when you were in high school, you got bad grades, and that was like a, that's sort of like the worst thing that an Asian student can do.
Yeah, well, you know, I was always, you know, a free thinker. You know, I didn't believe that. I mean, grades are I mean, a psychological thing. I mean, it's just a letter on a piece of paper. If you don't think it's important, then it's not. But the thing is, most people are like sheep, you know, or zombies. Almost everything, if you really think about it, almost everything you believe is because everyone else believes it or because society told you to believe it. You know, most people just, you know, don't think for themselves. They just believe whatever everyone else does, and they assume that if everyone believes something, then it must be true, you know, or if society says something, then it must be true. So they never, you know, critically think or analyze these things. And grades is an example. I mean, if I get an F, you know, on a test, I can choose to take that personally or not. If I don't think it's important, then it's not for me. It's just a letter on a piece of paper. So you have that choice to not let it affect you. But most people don't realize that because they care about what other people think, you know. And I found that in order to be truly free, to have true freedom, it begins in the mind. And the first thing you got to do is not care what other people think. Just be true to yourself. Be true to your heart. Be true to your life purpose, you know, and your passion. And, you know, once you don't care about what other people think, you're actually a lot more free than you were before because I mean, other people can't affect you or and you don't have to live to please other people, you know, or to please your society or your peers or to keep up an image to compete with other people because, you know, I mean, you just don't care. You're just doing what's best for you and evaluating yourself by your own standards. And that's the ultimate freedom that one can have. And yeah, you're right. I mean, I didn't fit into the Asian American culture because they were all about grades and trying to get into the highest universities, you know, so I was kind of a misfit in both cultures, the American culture and the Asian culture. I always saw myself as very sincere and authentic and down to earth. But I mean, that isn't enough because, like I said, you can be very sincere and you can be very friendly and outgoing. But if you don't break into any cliques, then you know you don't have any friends. So that's really sad and you know telling that
You were in high school. You did visit Taiwan. Was there that culture of cliques there, or that's more of an American thing?
Yeah, Taiwan actually has cliques too. You know, just like in America, and people don't. It's similar to America in that people don't socialize outside of their cliques, and that's true of Japan and Korea too, the first world Asian countries. But the thing is, if you don't belong to a clique, you're not, you know, you're not really persecuted there. And if you have people that you're seeing every day at school and work, it's a lot easier to make friends too. And you just don't feel like you have to keep up a bravado of confidence or something, or keep up an image. I mean, it's still not as people are more introverted there and reserved, but it's not as, you know, fake or artificial. Yeah, it is cliquish, but for in a different way for different reasons.
Well, you also, I think, is it more like in America, if you look at high school, popularity is not necessarily based on who is the best student. I mean, that's kind of the – I think in Asian culture there's a more of an emphasis on education, but in America – I think I'd say in American culture, popularity was based on extroversion.
Yeah, well, I think that's actually a myth because, like I said, you can be – very outgoing and not have any friends if you don't break into any cliques. You kind of have to play the game and, you know, play the superficial games that it takes to break into cliques. And some people are good at that because they're natural conformists, but I've never, you know, I've always been kind of a contrarian, you know, I don't go with the crowd. I think for myself. So I've never been really good at breaking into cliques, you know, and you kind of have to be somewhat of a conformist to break into a clique. And that's the problem with me. And I've actually always vibed more with the European culture than with the Asian or the American culture. Because Europeans are kind of they kind of have an intellectual life where they think for themselves. So, for example, I mean, you could go to Italy or Greece or France, and you could find these really intellectual guys that also know how to have fun. I mean, they're not nerds or geeks or anything. They know how to have fun. You know, I mean, they're very charming to women and they're very handsome, but they're very artistic and intellectual at the same time. You know, whereas in America, if you're like that, I mean, you're kind of a nerd or a misfit, you know, and so I've always vibed with that because my mentality was more, see, in Europe, people judge their life by the variety of experiences they've had. They don't judge their life by their money or their career. You know, they don't see what they do for a living.
Yeah, in some parts of identity. Europe, it's actually considered rude to ask someone, like, what they do for a living or to talk about how much money someone makes. It's considered rude in a lot of Europe.
Yeah, it is, and people aren't obsessed with their career. I mean, their identity is based on you know who they are, their soul, their experiences, their variety. When they look at their life, they think, you know, how much variety, what kind of experiences have I had? How much variety do I have in my experiences and my travels? That's why you see so many Europeans traveling, like as backpackers or something. Whereas, you know, there's a lesser percentage of Americans. I think only like 8% of Americans have passports last time I heard. It might have grown since then, but, Americans don't travel internationally as much as Europeans do. And, so yeah, I mean they judge their life by the experiences they had, whereas Americans judge it by material things and their career and their keeping up with their Joneses, you know. And I don't think that's an authentic way to live, you know. It's just so unnatural to me, you know. I've never been able to fit into that even when I've tried. I mean, it just was not me, you know. And I don't think humans were meant to be that way. It's just not natural to judge yourself, you know, by material things, because those things are illusions anyways. I mean what makes people happy is, and this is a key point that the media will never tell you, is that the happiest people in the world are not people who have too little or too much, but people who have just enough. Those are the people that are most balanced and the most happy and who have the most meaningful, you know, interaction, you know.
Well, the media is kind of based on consumerism. Like, if you look at how Hollywood and the big corporations, they're making a massive profit off of consumerism. So they want to keep that going, and the whole commercialized culture of consumerism.
Yeah, the media is. I mean. The media is all about boosting the economy. I mean, one thing I don't like about the U.S. mainstream media is when people are starting to buy less useless junk, for example, they actually report that as bad news, you know, as though, you know, people should go out and buy useless junk that they don't need to try to, you know, and waste their money and fill their house with useless
junk.
Yeah,
it's a waste of money. I mean, aesthetically, it's – I mean, in Europe, people – value quality over quantity, and it's also bad for the environment. But it's like what George Bush said, that right after 9/11, to do your patriotic duty and go out and like shop.
Yeah, and that's just insane. I mean, they're obviously controlled by the corporate interests, you know, where they, you know, everything is about working and consuming rather than quality of life. I mean, there's a saying in Europe, Europeans work to live, whereas Americans live to work. And there's another saying by someone that I quoted in my ebook, where he says, America is a country that's built for doing business, not living life. So it's hard to have a quality, you know, rich life in America because, you know, I mean, if your whole life is spent working, I mean, if you think about it, it's an oxymoron. I mean, what's the point of working to make a living if almost all of your living or your life consists of working? It defeats the purpose. But Americans are so brainwashed that they don't stop and think about these things. Everyone just lives – I mean, people just live to make money. And I think that the brainwashing and the mind control is actually stronger in America than it is in other countries, because Americans see themselves as individuals, you know, with their own outspoken ideas and thoughts. And in an individualist country, in order to control people, you have to use stronger mind control techniques. Whereas in Asia, you know, they don't need to turn up the mind control because – I mean, even though every government uses some form of mind control, in Asia they don't need that much mind control because people are naturally conformed, so they don't need to brainwash people as much, you know, as in America, you know, where they have to you know, use stronger techniques than you know, in a country where everyone thinks they're an individual. So that's something I've noticed.
What do you think the origins of it are? I mean, there's different ways to look at it. I know that some people come up with the so-called conspiracy theories to explain stuff. And then some people say it's just a trend that kind of evolved on its own. But how do you see the origins of this? These trends have been going on for a while, and some of them are fairly recent, but it does seem to be getting worse and worse, almost like a cancer that's spreading.
Yeah, well, I think it's both. I mean, there's the economic factor, and also, you know, there's an agenda for social engineering, and we don't really know what that agenda is. But I don't think everything. I mean, for the elite class, they can't. I don't think everything is about money because they have all the money in the world and they can print money out of thin air. I don't think they're concerned with making more money. I mean, they obviously have some hidden agenda that we don't know. I mean, it might be like a lot of conspiracy people say, or like Alex Jones says or David Icke says, you know, a new world order or a global government. I mean, it might be that, but there definitely is a lot of social engineering because I mean. If you look at American society, I mean, people are segregated more than they are in other countries because, you know, it's like they say, it's the divide and conquer strategy. You have to divide people into little bubbles to make them weak so that they're not a threat to the elite.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the biggest threat to the elite is people kind of working together, and you know, obviously. And they just want to divide people into different, as you said, different bubbles to exactly divide and conquer.
Yeah, and you know, they prey on fear. I mean, you see, in every country, the only way a few people can control, you know, the many, a lot of people, is by making, convincing people to give up their power. See, if you don't give away your power, then no one can really control you. I mean, control itself is an illusion, but as long as you don't organize a movement, you know, the government really doesn't care what you do. I mean, most of the time, even if you break a few laws, they're not really gonna worry about it. You know, if you're just an individual, you know, it's when you organize a movement and draw attention to it that they start to care. You know, otherwise, you know, they don't really care what you do. So. I mean,
none of the political movements are really. I think in this country we have the liberals and the conservatives, and I think they're both. The thing I would say about conservatives are always quick to defend the sort of making a profit. They're all about making a profit, and that's kind of what they're about. But the thing, liberals are just. Liberals are just, I think so many of them are just so politically correct. You can't have a discussion with them without them freaking out about political correctness. So they're both kind of useless in those two regards.
Yeah, I mean, that's very ironic. I mean, it's actually very hypocritical because I mean, America has been taken over by political correctness, especially on the West Coast and in New York. And if you have a country with free speech, I mean, how can you have free speech but demand that everybody be politically correct, you know, and not say what's on their mind or not speak the truth? I mean, there's so much hypocrisy in America that it just doesn't make any sense, you know, to have such contradictory laws and expectations. Yeah, I mean, truth is often a taboo now, and I'm actually more of a libertarian, you know, than a conservative or a liberal, but But I've noticed that conservatives, even though they can be more narrow-minded, they're at least more they're usually more down to earth than liberals are. And I've had a lot of conservative friends who will, like, even though I disagree with them, they still keep me as friends. Whereas when I have liberal friends, if I don't agree with their views, they usually break off the friendship. You know, I mean, they're a lot more insecure.
Yeah, that's true. I agree completely. I mean, I disagree with conservatives. But for the most part, conservatives aren't as bad as liberals when it comes to you have to be really careful what you say around them or they'll get offended. If you say the wrong thing, they get upset. Or
they're a lot more insecure. Yeah. So it's like I mean, it's what's really ironic is, I mean, these liberals think they're progressive or something, but how can you be progressive if I can't even be honest around them? If it's almost like they're Nazis against free speech. I mean, if you think about it, it's the liberals that want all the political correctness. You know, I mean, they're less authentic and so insecure and but yeah, if you have liberal friends, you'll find that once you don't agree with them, they'll get offended and they'll cut off the friendship with you. I mean, they just don't like you if you don't agree with them, you know, and they're actually a lot more hateful than the conservatives are. I mean, it's like they have an axe to grind or something. If you've noticed, they're less mentally balanced. I mean, I'm not, you know, either, you know, for or against either side, but those are just observations that I've noticed.
Hey, hold on a second, please. It's time for a break. Please stay with us.
We'll be back with The Stark Truth after this break. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
So as you can see in the report, quite a few people are a little confused about what the debate actually is. So I want to bring you some quick facts. Now, originally the White House put forth a mandate, part of the health care bill, requiring insurance plans to cover birth control for employers, even if those employers were religious in nature, Catholic colleges, for example, in which students would also need to be covered. Well, then President Obama announced last month that religiously affiliated employers would not have to cover that contraception, that instead insurers would do so. The gray area has to do with self-insured employers who directly cover employees' health care costs out of their own funds. That's still a little bit up in the air. The Department of Health and Human Services has been talking about that just today, even some of the language there. But we do want to pull this out of just the contraception story and talk about what else this debate has sparked. Conversations ranging from the separation of church and state, women's rights, government's rights, prostitution, and even GOP candidate Rick Santorum promising to, quote, initiate a war on pornography if he's elected. With all this, once again, this juxtaposition between rhetoric and reality, especially when it comes to preaching morality. Because when you do a little digging, you realize that in places where people are using one hand to shake their finger and preach about right and wrong, they're using the other hand to, well, do other things. Take a look at this map. This shows states where the highest number of people who are subscribing to adult membership websites, according to a 2009 study, 8 out of 10 of those states, including Mississippi, Arkansas, West Virginia, those states went to John McCain in the 2008 election. So it seems in some cases the harsher the rules, the higher the interest. And I want to talk more about this with Megan Carpentier, executive editor of The Raw Story. What do you think, Megan? Does the Bible Belt have a love affair with porn?
Well, I think Americans have a love affair with porn. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry in this country. So when you look at pornography in this country, people are using it, whether they're paying for it or whether they're finding it on websites. It's ubiquitous in many cases. And that's part of Rick Santorum's problem, is that he doesn't think that people should be using it. He thinks it's contributing to the decline of families in this country.
But what do you think it says? I mean, this map that we showed that shows these red states, you know, 8 out of 10 of the top states where people are members of these adult websites are, you know, traditionally conservative states. What do you think it says that they're the people that are, you know, consuming this porn?
I think it's really interesting because when you look at porn consumers, in many cases, it's 75% 80% men. And obviously, Rick Santorum, Mitt Romney, the GOP folks in this debate are actually losing votes among women. So to some degree, it almost seems like this is an effort designed to gain back women's voters and women's trust after this debate on contraception, where they're coming out and calling women.
Let's return to the Stark Truth, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome back. I'm here with Winston Wu, and we've been just kind of discussing American culture. So we're kind of talking about liberals and political correctness. I think you're right what you're saying, as I think among... there is political correctness among the conservative establishment, but just among regular people who maybe lean conservative, who they aren't necessarily people who are really political, just sort of regular Americans. They generally are less political correct, but there are certain issues that are really taboo among almost 90% of society that you're not really supposed to talk about.
There are so many taboos in America that I don't see how you know, I mean, what's the point of the First Amendment or the free speech? I mean, most of these laws, you know, are just on paper. They're not really enforced. I mean, they're not really lived, you know.
Have to say is most people, when they think of they associate freedom as freedom from government oppression, but in a lot of cases, society and culture can be almost equally oppressive as a government could be.
Yeah, the whole freedom thing doesn't make sense because I could talk a lot about this because I've written a lot of articles on this, but most countries are not, you know, fascist, you know, or there's this myth in America that it's the freest country in the world, but there's really nothing to support that, because in most countries, I mean, in pretty much any country, as long as you obey the laws, the government doesn't care what you do. So, you know, as long as you pay your bills and obey the laws, that you're pretty much free to do whatever you want, and that's true anywhere. So. You know, in America and in other countries, I mean, you can do the same thing in Australia or Europe too. I mean, so there's no evidence for this myth, you know, that America is the freest country in the world. Or because when people talk about freedom in America, they act like they sort of insinuate that other countries don't have the freedoms that we have.
There's nothing absurd to support that. We have in sheer numbers and percentage, we have the most people in prisons in the entire world. I mean, that's not a free country.
Yeah, and also if you think about it, I mean, if you look at it, America actually has more laws than other countries do, and they enforce them too more tightly than other countries do. So if you have more laws and more regulations, then you have less freedom, you know, as a business and as a person than you do in other countries. So in that sense, America actually has less freedoms than other countries. I mean, there is like political and religious freedom, yeah, in some ways, but to me, freedom is waking up and doing what you want every day. And most people, you know, go to a job that they don't like every day, and so they're completely controlled and enslaved by their job and you know, and by the economic system. So in that sense, there's no true freedom, you know, unless you're self-employed or you know, or you have more free time, you know, or you're
the
able
other
to
thing with political correctness is, I mean, a lot of people, if they're outspoken about something that's politically incorrect, they have to worry about losing their job. I mean, a lot of these big corporations will fire people for having politically incorrect views.
Oh, definitely. I mean, when you're employed, I mean, you have to watch what you say. You can't even say what you want. So I mean, there's not even any free speech, you know. So a lot of things you believe in are myths, you know. And you know, I would even say the whole democracy thing is a myth too, because a democracy technically means the rule by the majority. But what country on earth, you know, is ruled by the majority, definitely not the U.S. I mean, the people of the United States have no control over policy. I mean, if there was a majority rule in the U.S., then there would be no wars, there would be no taxes, and the government would leave everyone alone. But that's not true, you know. So obviously, if the majority of the American people don't control the U.S. or control the U.S. government, then technically it's not a democracy. So that actually is another myth. Technically, it's a total myth. And the founding fathers founded America as a republic. And you know,
yeah,
just like the Roman
they emphasize a republic, not a democracy. But we're not even a democracy. I mean,
we're an oligarchy now. We're an oligarchy now, which is ruled by you know, ruled by the elite, or ruled by the rich, or corporatocracy, well, ruled by the corporate elite. So there's only two stable forms of government in the world. One is a republic, and one is an oligarchy. A republic is ruled by law, and an oligarchy is ruled by the elite. And those are the only two stable forms of government, and obviously America has become a rule by the elite, so technically it's an oligarchy now, not a republic anymore. And, you know, it's been for a long time. So, but a democracy, I mean, it never was. So I don't know who started that myth. I mean, I think the whole voting process is just an illusion to give people a sense of power. And amazingly, people still believe in it, even though it's been discredited. I mean, it's been disproven a long time ago that you know, voting does not change policy. It doesn't affect anything. I mean, the government still does what it wants. I mean, regardless of what you vote for, I mean, the policy doesn't change. But people are still gullible enough to fall for it, and that's really sad.
Would you say you felt freer in other parts of the world?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have to. I felt like you know, people were easier to meet, more sociable, more down to earth, and you know, and I didn't have to be something that I was not, and I actually, you know, meet a lot more people, make a lot more friends, especially when you're traveling, you know. People are just more inclusive. Not in every country, of course, but definitely in some places.
Which countries would you say are more inclusive, and which ones are not so inclusive?
I would say most of Europe is, except maybe Scandinavia, and especially Eastern Europe is more inclusive, and Russia, Ukraine, Latin America, and I'd say most of Asia is like that too, and, except for the first world countries like Japan, Korea, Taiwan. It does seem like the more economically prosperous a country is, the less social people are, you know. I mean, it's a sad truth, but poor people are more compassionate and kind because they're more interdependent with each other. You know, poor people are more friendly and open with strangers than middle class and above are. They're more cliquish. And, you know, and that's a universal thing that I've noticed, that you know, that the more money you have, the less social you are, you know, unless you're a really naturally outgoing guy like me. Like no matter how much money I have, I'm still very open and outgoing because I'm very, you know, I mean, I'm friendly and authentic, you know. It doesn't make me snobby or antisocial, you know. So it depends, you know, but yeah, it's definitely large regions. South America, Africa, Russia, Ukraine, China, most of Europe. I'd say most of the world is very, very authentic and easy to make friends. I mean, it just flows a lot more naturally. And I'd actually say that, I mean, you know how in American movies everyone looks very friendly and expressive and outgoing and easy to meet? I mean, that's not the way America is in real life, but in Europe, it actually is that way, as you see in American movies, a lot more than
I don't get. Well, a lot of people like to talk about how European Americans always like to complain Europeans are snooty.
Well, some Europeans are culture snobs, like in France, for instance. They're snobby about their culture, but once you get used to that and you learn how to get on their good side and I mean then they start to open up and warm up, you know. I mean, it is true that they're culture snobs, you know, but the thing is, the problem in America is a lot of people, you know, are just isolated, and there's a lot of people that just hate other people in general. They just dislike people. A lot of people can only tolerate other people for only a short period of time. You know, that's one reason why people prefer, a lot of people prefer to be alone in America, is there's just this hatred of other people. I don't know why, but you won't find that in Europe, where people naturally just hate other people in general. So, I mean, a lot of countries do have snobbiness, but it's a different kind of snobbiness. It's more like a nationalism kind of snobbiness.
I think that's a good thing, that they want to preserve their culture. And I mean, European culture is a lot more, it is more authentic because it's been around. It's evolved over a very long time, like thousands of years or hundreds of thousands or thousands of years. The thing about American culture is relatively new. And we do have some areas have strong regional cultures, but a lot of American culture is just kind of this kind of consumerism, and that's kind of what we're spreading. Or we're spreading that to the rest of the world. So people in let's say France, a lot of them resent that when they see like McDonald's opening up there. And their culture, but it is, on the other hand, there is a lot of, from what I've heard, Europe is far from perfect. They do have all these speech laws there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would take everything the media says with a grain of salt, because the media is going to portray everything in the most negative and stressful way possible. That's why I don't even watch the news. I mean, but if you go there as a traveler or as a visitor, and spend some time in different parts of Europe, I mean, you definitely experience a more authentic, you know, people, you know, and especially for me, because I mean, I would say that I'm more like them than I am a typical American, because I don't like to, you know, do superficial greetings or act fake or have this, you know, fake optimism, you know, that a lot of Americans do. You know, and plus a lot of Europeans, one thing I've noticed is that young people in Europe can have deep conversations and deep, meaningful conversations, whereas in America, usually the older crowd, like the 40-year-old and above crowd, you know, tends to be more down to earth and into deep conversations, you know, whereas, you know, if you look at teenagers in America or the young crowd, you know, I mean, most of them are pretty much airheadish and not into deep conversations. It's like being more dumb is being cool, you know. There's this dumb is cool, you know, mentality in America among the young groups. But in Europe, I mean, the young people are more down to earth and they speak more languages and they have a more broader knowledge of topics to talk about. I mean, the quality of the conversations are just much, much higher. I mean, people are more curious about the rest of the world. So you notice a difference. I mean, I've met, you know, girls in Europe in who are 20 years old and they're very beautiful and they could pass for models and yet they're very down to earth and authentic, you know, and they're not full of themselves and they're just more authentic, you know, and they have an intellectual life, not just an external life. They like to have fun too, of course, but they're also into learning things and enriching themselves culturally and mentally too.
What is it that Steve Hoka, who he's done some, I think he had a used to have a radio show, I think on YouTube, he said something that the issue of male loneliness is the most taboo issue in our society. He says even more so than anti-Semitism.
Yeah, it seems to be, because I mean if you look at YouTube, I mean they actually remove videos about male loneliness or the dating problems in America, and that gets talked about less than even anti-Semitism. I mean, if you're a racist, yeah, I mean it is a taboo subject, but I mean, if you talk about the problems with the dating scene, it just makes you look like a loser.
You think in some ways it is, because what is anything to do with race? Race is definitely, or anti-Semitism are very extremely taboo topics. But I think you're right. People don't want to talk about that issue because people say, "Oh, you're a loser." So that's what makes it, the social conditioning, even not necessarily the political correctness, makes that a very taboo subject.
Yeah, and plus, you know, the feminism in the U.S. makes it, I mean, it almost illegal to say anything bad about the dating scene in the U.S. I mean, or to, you know, or to talk about men's problems, because all the focus, they want all the focus to be on women and children. I mean, it's like that's all that matters. Men are expendable in the U.S. You know, men don't have you know, the rights that women and children do. So, and that's really sad, because men work the hardest to provide, you know, for everything. And, you know, I mean, they invent things, they build things, but they're treated, you know, as second class citizens in America. America is basically has become a matriarchy for sure. I mean, it's almost politically correct to be a man. I mean, if you're a single heterosexual male, I mean, you're pretty much considered, you know, a dangerous creep unless you prove otherwise. But yeah, I mean, and also, it's taboo to talk about the dating problems in general in America, because you have to. I mean, it makes you look like a loser. Plus, most people are trying to you know, look cool and confident like a winner. But if you blame society for some loneliness epidemic in America, then you're going the opposite way. You're not trying to prove yourself to be cool in America or improve your image. It actually just damages your image. So it's like a self-harming thing, you know, that and so most people don't have the guts to talk about it, you know. But it's true, there's a huge percentage of guys that, you know, are lonely, they have no romance, no love in their life, and they have no choices. They can't even get a girl to have coffee with them, because women, I mean the women there are so picky, you know, and they all want the top 10% of the men, and so 90, you know, a large percentage of the men, 80 or 90%, you know, have to settle, and still a large percentage have no choices too. I mean, there's guys that go for years with no dates or girlfriends at all.
And keep in mind, a lot of these guys, they're not necessarily guys you would think are losers. These are just normal men.
Yeah, some of them have good jobs, and some of them are decent looking, you know. And yet they still can't find a date because there's so many. I mean, with the narcissism in America, everyone thinks they deserve someone perfect, you know, with the best. Actually, not so much the men. Men just want a girl who's feminine and down to earth and sincere, you know. But you know, a lot of women want the whole package. They want height, status, looks, money, great personality. They want everything, the whole package of everything, you know. And they're just. And most men don't fit those qualities, so a lot of women in America reject like 99% of men, you know, even of everyone that likes them. So there are just so many lonely men, and they're afraid to talk about it. So what they do is they deny it and focus on their work and their career, you know. So there's a lot of men suffering in silent misery out there, and I get letters and emails from them all the time that they never knew that other people were feeling the same way, and that. They didn't know that the problem was them too. They thought the problem was them, because you're taught in American culture that if you have, you know, if you're lonely or any problem you have, you got to blame yourself and improve yourself because you know it's they insinuate that society is normal and healthy, and that if there's a problem, then it's the individual, not the society, and that's just not true, you know, because. I always say, if the problem is me, then how come in other countries I don't have the same problem? You know, that kind of, you know, debunks that myth that the problem is always it must be with me. Because if it was with me, then it would be the same everywhere, and it's not. You know, I notice a huge difference in cultures, and plus it's also taboo to you know, to compare cultures or to compare groups of people. You know, because then you get accused of generalizing, you know. But you see, I'm not really generalizing. I'm just defining very strong patterns that I see, you know. Like, for example, if you see eight in a field with 10 boxes, if you see 8 X's and 2 O's, then you know, then I see a pattern of X's, you know. I mean, everything – I mean, when you compare and generalize, it is tricky because on the one hand, it's not true it's not true that 100% of people are one way or another. You know, you can't overgeneralize. Yes. But on the other hand, you can't say that everyone is the same either in the world either, because they're
not.
Yeah,
it's considered like you're called a racist if you say there's differences between people. Well,
yeah,
I'd like to thank you for being on.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and I'd recommend everyone visit my website at happierabroad.com, HAPPIERABROAD.com, and you'll find a lot of groundbreaking information and taboo truths that you can't find anywhere else. And we have a great community, a forum of advisors that give a lot of advice on how to find happiness, you know, overseas or whatever you want to do. Just a lot of intellectual topics and posters, you know, that are very truthful, complete free thinkers, you know. Happierabroad.com.
That's all we have for tonight, so take care, and we'll be back with you next time.
Thanks. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Robert Stark will return next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Visit our website at reasonradionetwork.com.